Welcome everyone to the Friday Forum webinar. I'm Marianne Stumbaugh, Assistant Director of Alumni Career Services here at the Alumni Association at UVA, and I'm very pleased to introduce Andrea Dolph as our alumni presenter for today's Friday Forum. Andrea graduated from UVA in 1979 with a degree in Russian Studies, and she started her career at the CIA, which was the most obvious place at that time for a Russian major. She went on to General Electric and Lockheed Martin, earning her master's degree in computer science during her early years at GE. Andrea worked her way up in management and developed her professional skills well beyond technical management. She has worked in team building, facilitation, and college recruiting, and has more than 25 years of hands-on experience in strategic business and technology planning, program and budget management, and process optimization. In 1993, when GE Aerospace was faced with its first layoff in years, Andrea was part of the management team deciding who would stay and who would go. She was surprised to see that employees were not let go for lack of technical skills, but for their lack of workplace skills, such as the ability to adapt to a new work culture, spoken and written business communication, and planning. That experience led Andrea to start her own company, Pragmaticus, whose mission is to help young adults transition from college to the workplace. Today, Andrea is going to talk to us about identifying and analyzing the processes in our lives and how creating and improving those processes can make our lives better. Andrea applies her practical skills to her personal life as well as at work. She is married, has two children, and spends many hours as a volunteer. I mentioned in one of my emails that this topic is deceptively simple, and I really think that is true. Since I first started talking about this webinar with Andrea, I've been realizing how many things, both at work and at home, can be improved and streamlined with process thinking. Now that I'm aware, it just seems to keep coming up. So I think you will find this webinar very enlightening. There will be some time at the end of the webinar for questions, which you can type into the chat box at the lower left of your screen. Andrea will also ask for your input throughout the webinar. Now, here's Andrea Dolph with Process Thinking, the essential skill that will change your life.
Thank you, Marianne. Hello, WHOs and family and friends that I see have joined in today. I'm speaking to you from just outside of Philadelphia, and I'm here with my business partner, Linda Dowd. I mention that because from time to time you may see me looking over to talk to her, or you may see her hand appear on the screen. Today, we're going to talk about process thinking, but I want to start with a question to you. It seems like everyone I talk to these days complains about the same thing. I don't have enough time. I'm so busy. So let me ask you, if you had 5 more hours of free time each week in your life, what would you do with it? Feel free to write in the chat box. Sleep. Yep, that was my choice too. Sleep. Oh, these are neat ideas. So you guys have a lot of things you'd like to do. I'm hoping that by the end of this webinar today, you'll be able to find 5 hours to do some of these things. We live with process everywhere we turn, at work, at home. But I would bet that most of us don't have really a full idea of just how much benefit we can get from working with process. To save up time, and just to be better at the things that we do. So today what I'm going to talk to you about is what is process and what is process thinking? How can we apply the benefits of process to not just our professional lives, but our private lives, including even how we raise our kids? We'll talk about why process thinking is not just a skill unto itself, but it's also the core of many other skills that we practice. And then we'll wrap up with some tips on how to develop your own process thinking and some pitfalls to avoid. I want to start with a definition of process. Process is a repeatable sequence of predictable actions that produces a desired product, service, or outcome. And there's a few key words in that definition. Repeatable. So a to-do list is not a process because it's not usually repeatable. A process is something that we do over and over or an organization does over and over again. Sequence implies that there is a preferred order of steps, not just a random order. Predictable means that with some degree of reliability, we can understand what the output is, and that leads to the last important element of this definition, produces a desired product, service, or outcome. There is a result that one should expect from process. And there's all kinds of examples of process. Something as simple as baking a cake is a process. But then there are many much more complicated processes that we may be involved with. Systems engineering process, a software development process, a manufacturing process. So there's all levels. Process thinking, then, is the ability to work with process, to be able to identify steps in a process, to be able to optimize a process, to analyze each of those steps and find the best way or the fastest way to do it, and to understand where best to apply process in the different things that we do. I'm going to use a fairly trivial but actually powerful example to explain process and how it can make your life different by talking about my own immediate family's grocery shopping process. Several years ago, my husband and I were both working and our children were younger, and grocery shopping was just the most frustrating thing that I think I had to do during the week. Monday, I might start out all ready to go for the week. We decide what we're going to eat that night. One of us would run to the grocery store, typically me, because I have the shorter commute, and then we'd make dinner. Next night, same thing. What do we feel like eating tonight? Run out, buy the food. Up, got home, thought I had cooking oil or bread or whatever the recipe or the meal that we're going to eat needed, go back to the store. Wednesday, we might be a little better, back like Monday. Thursday, we're starting to get tired. Forget it. We don't feel like cooking. We're just going to go out and eat someplace, and so on. So it was really not a very efficient way to grocery shop, to prepare meals, and just to eat in a healthy way. So we got very frustrated by the process. And finally, one day, we said, we have to change this. So we did. And what we started doing is on Sunday morning, during commercials of the talking heads on Sunday morning shows, I would make a grocery list and try to plan out the week's meals. Then my husband, John, would go off to the grocery store and buy the food, and we would try to live with a plan of making our meals through the week. Now, there were some benefits from this. We found that we actually saved some time because we spent much less time commuting back and forth to the store and just being at the store. It was less expensive. We weren't driving as much, but also we weren't wasting as much food. We started to have slightly more healthy meals because we were paying more attention to what we were eating and getting more balance and making sure we got those fruits and vegetables in there. But it was still a somewhat frustrating process because I wasn't very efficient in writing my grocery list. So my husband would wander around the store looking for things, sometimes forgetting things on the list. My meals, because I was just planning them in my head, didn't always work out with our schedule that week because we often had things happening in the evenings. And I still would forget some of the things that we needed to make those meals. So one day, my husband had the idea that he would make a spreadsheet. And he would write down on the spreadsheet all the foods that we typically bought from each aisle in the grocery store. And he organized it by aisle in the grocery store. And all I had to do was circle those items, and then he left a little space at the bottom of each aisle where I could fill in any other foods that maybe were different that week but would be found on that aisle. And then there was a little space that I could write in foods that I had no idea what aisle they were on, and he would find them. And since I had this piece of paper that he would then print out for me every Sunday morning and hand to me, then I would turn it over and I would actually write the list of meals on the back and what day we were going to have what, which called my attention a little bit more to what schedule we had for that week and, you know, did I need a crock pot recipe on one day or could I spend a little time cooking on a different day because we didn't have anything to do that evening. And the result was that my husband could shop in absolutely half the time. Again, we shaved off a little bit in terms of gas and wasted food. Because I was more focused and less distracted by the process now, I was thinking about a whole week of food, not just one day's meal. And just getting better at making healthy choices. And the whole process just was less frustrating. We were much more efficient, but I still would have a little mistake here or there. So my daughter was a little older. After time had passed, my daughter was a little bit older, and she's the organization queen in our house, she decided that she would go through the pantries and label shelves and alphabetize the spice rack so that I could, at a glance, see what food actually existed. And if you knew the way we live, you'd be shocked that we do this, because as a rule, we're not a very organized family in this regard, but when it comes to grocery shopping, we are. At any rate, she organized us, and then this started to become almost a game for us. We decided one day that we could rip this list that we had, since it was organized by aisle, rip it in half, and my daughter would go to one side of the store and I'd be on the other, and we'd each do the grocery shopping for the half of the store that we were in, meet in the middle, and sign out. And the result was, we went from what I'm estimating was about a 5 or 6 hour process in any given week to, I think our record was 38 minutes for a week of grocery shopping. And it actually was kind of fun, because we were always trying to find a way to shave another minute off the process. So this was kind of a trivial example, but it's still, we learned a lot from what we did. First of all, we discovered that by using process for our grocery shopping, that we were able to enhance our efficiency. And this is what people typically think of when they think about using process and process improvement, that you can save time and money. We did that by eliminating redundant trips to the store and by eliminating the errors that we had in our process when we either forgot to have food available for a meal, or maybe we'd have a lot of it because I bought 5 jars of mayonnaise thinking that I didn't have it. But we discovered some other things as well. We discovered that by having a process that became routine for us, that we are freed up to think more creatively. I could spend a little bit more time thinking about different kinds of menus, and instead of having those same 10 meals recycled from every 2 weeks, I started looking for different things to make and actually signed up for an email that sends me new recipes a few times a week, and I could try those because I wasn't burdened with this really cumbersome process. And we also saw that instead of this being just a really boring task that one or two of us had to do, that the whole family could come together and work on it as a project. So that was sort of a trivial example. Process really is most known in the workplace, and I'll give you a brief history of it. Way back, actually, in the early 1900s, the first tools for working with business process improvements started to emerge. These are things like flow charts and Gantt charts and some of the things that you see with really formal business process analysis. In 1986, Motorola is credited with having invented Six Sigma, which is probably one of the most famous, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with, process improvement initiatives or techniques that businesses use. But it really wasn't until the 1990s when Jack Welch, who was kind of the king of CEOs at the time at GE, declared that Six Sigma would be one of his key business strategies for making GE a much more productive company. So Six Sigma was out there, and as this became kind of the rage across corporations, there was Lean Six Sigma, BPO, BPM, BPI, the whole ISO certifications, CMM, a whole host of other things that I'm sure you've heard of or maybe even worked with. Today, businesses are still using many of these techniques, partly because so many people were trained and the concept of process has become ingrained in many business cultures. But with the economy being challenging at this point, then some companies are starting to turn to process improvement as a way to remain profitable. And here's a specific case study from UPS. UPS was actually founded back in 1907, and they started and for many decades remained a U.S.-based small package deliverer. They always had a strong culture oriented toward process. So when they decided in the early 2000s that they were going to become a more global company, that they were going to increase their customer value by offering more services and better quality service, and that they wanted to maintain, if not increase, their profitability, they relied on their process culture to make this happen. What they did was they created two centers of excellence. One was a process center of excellence, where there were a lot of trained people, and it was chaired by some of their top executives to really emphasize the importance of this initiative. They created them to really examine from start to finish, enterprise-wide, what their processes were and how they could either be improved or adapted so that they could meet their goals. At the same time, they created a center of excellence for project management, again, headed by some of their top executives, so that they could really manage these projects and make sure that any changes that they needed to introduce were really done well. Throughout their change process, they used process to benchmark their performance. So they would look at maybe a sub-process and compare it to how their competitors were doing. They used process to apply technology in the right places. And they even designed processes to communicate both internally and externally with customers and vendors. The result was that by the end of 2011, and there's a case study if you're interested that I've written on this chart, then they grew from primarily the U.S.-based presence to having a presence in 200 countries. They became not just a small package deliverer, but a transporter of all kinds of things, including things like medical supplies, which is a highly regulated industry. They did maintain their profitability. They went from being a $24 billion company to over a $50 billion company. They went from 330,000 employees to 425,000, and they were delivering $3 billion packages at the beginning, up to $4 billion, and they really did a good job of using technology wisely. Okay, I'm going to try to adjust the microphone. I've been told that the volume might not be right. Let's keep going with this, and you guys can tell me if you can hear me better. So, with UPS, when they looked at their end-to-end processes, what they discovered was that by focusing on the end customer, and this is typical of most of these formal process improvements, they could not just deliver what the customer needed, but also look at some of their interfaces with their customers and make some improvements there. By thinking of the entire process, they also found that there were steps that they may have skipped that would impact quality, like let's say your review process, and that would prevent them from having to rework it later. And one of my favorite quotes from them was a statement that we could have easily just thrown money at this, but instead we wanted to use our resources more wisely. So what they did was they really looked at where in the process technology fit the best, or they redesigned their processes so that they could really take advantage of the tools that they decided to implement. We think of process improvement in terms of money and time, but there are also benefits that can be gained as far as personnel and what kind of an atmosphere is created in a work environment. I recently read a study about teamwork and process, and most companies are organized around functions, like the finance function or manufacturing function, systems engineering function, And a lot of times with organizations like that, silos tend to be created where the organization focuses mostly on their needs and not across the boundaries to the other organizations within their company. So what a focus on process can do is to break down what they call silos and to focus more on delivering a total solution that meets the customer's objectives. And the study also said that when a problem arises in these process-focused companies, that a lot of times to find a solution, the organization looks more at where the process failed as opposed to looking for an individual or an organization that they can single out and point the finger at. And that creates much more of a sense of trust within the organization. The other benefit from an employee standpoint is by seeing the big picture processes, then employees can better understand where they fit into the process. That makes it easier for them to set priorities about their work, to understand where they may need to put a little more effort, maybe what kind of format they deliver their output in, because they know the next person in the process and how they're going to use their work. And it's especially useful as an onboarding tool for new employees so that they can become productive faster because they do see that big picture. I keep mentioning enterprise-wide solutions and big corporations, but process is not limited just to these major kinds of changes. Process can be applied to smaller processes within an environment. And if you care to, then you can chime in. Maybe you've seen some process improvement for smaller changes in your own work environments. Some of the things that come to mind is a proposal writing process could be improved with process. Accounts receivable process, meeting scheduling. So again, if any of you have a process you've seen improved in your own work environments, please feel free to share. Help desk ticket response. Yeah, that's a good one. I keep talking about process in terms of for-profit organizations primarily, but process has a role in volunteer organizations as well, or nonprofits, but volunteers. I have a theory that we're seeing more and more that people aren't volunteering as much to do volunteer work. And one of my theories is that we just don't have time. We have more and more dual career families, or we have single parent families. We have kids who are involved in a lot of activities, and those activities are a lot more demanding than I think they were in past years. So people are reluctant to spend yet more time volunteering. And I think that a lot of volunteer organizations are maybe not as disciplined about defining their processes, which then makes it difficult for a person on the outside to get involved because, first of all, they can't readily identify where they can contribute. But then if they're asked to do something like, let's say, be the chair of a convention, an annual convention, or head up a fundraising activity within that organization, then without a process, it's almost like starting from the beginning and reinventing the wheel. I also have seen that in many cases there actually is a process, but it's in one person's head. And that leader or that person that sort of owns the process only drips the steps of the process out as it's needed to do that particular work, which means that a busy person can't plan ahead of time. They can only respond to the person who knows that process in their head as they're asked to do work. So I encourage organizations, volunteer organizations, to sit down and define their processes and to document them so that maybe they will attract more volunteers, or with the fewer volunteers that they do have, that they can be much more efficient with their time. I'm going to shift gears and talk about process for personal effectiveness. You may have read there are a lot of organizations, and the whole world of education right now is talking about 21st century skills. This is a set of skills that people have identified as being essential to being successful in the workplace now. And in fact, there are a number of studies out there. I can give you links to at least 10 that have been conducted. And these are sizable studies, sometimes with as many as 1,000 companies participating, where the studies have asked these employers, what skills are essential to be successful in your workplace, and what skills are lacking in your employees, and particularly your recent college graduates. And while you get slightly different answers from each of the studies, they're pretty much the same. And some of the ones that show up frequently are the ones that I have on this chart. Planning skills, communications, and communications includes both written skills and the ability to give presentations. Problem-solving skills and critical thinking skills. And that, there are many others, but this is just to give you an example. Each of these, as it turns out, really can be viewed as a process themselves. And by viewing them as a process, then an individual can apply some of the same concepts of optimizing the steps and optimizing the order of the steps so that they can practice these skills more efficiently. And I'll give you an example. This is a process that Linda and I teach. It's a planning process. And I'm sure none of you listening in today, but there are people out there who like to skip from, okay, I have an outcome I'm trying to achieve, to, I'm going to go to that bottom box there and just do it. And they don't take the time or don't know that they could take the time to do any of the steps in between. So let me just whiz you through these steps so you can see how planning can actually be a process. The first step would be to describe the outcome. What are you going to produce? It could be something tangible, or it could be an event, or it even could be peace of mind or less time to accomplish something. So you want to really have a good understanding of that outcome, including some of the constraints or the guidelines, like, are you limited in budget in creating this? Is there a certain age group that you have to appeal to? Because all of these descriptors of your outcome should influence the process that you use to create the outcome. And if you can see it, you can do it. So even something like an event, you can imagine these things in your head. Once you really have a clear idea to a level of detail of what the outcome is, the next step would be to define and order the tasks that are required to create this outcome. And each step that you create should have some kind of a milestone or an indication of completion. A lot of people don't take the time to do this, but it can be really helpful. I was working with a fourth grade teacher recently who was trying to teach planning to her class, and they decided that they were going to plan a talent show. And as it turned out, that when they went through the second step and really identified all of the tasks required to make the talent show happen, they figured out that they didn't have enough time to do all of the tasks because they were limited on, there was a certain date that was available on the calendar, and that was it. So they canceled the talent show idea, and my teacher said, you know, thank goodness we went through this step, because if we hadn't, I would have publicized it, and then we would have had to cancel it at the last minute, either that, or I would have had to recruit a bunch of mothers to pull several all-nighters to make it happen. The third step in the planning process is to identify the resources that are required with each step in the process. And resources are not just tangible, like people's, like materials and equipment, but it also can be your own time or other people's time that would be involved in whatever it is that you're going to do. The next step after that then is schedule the work. Now this is slightly different from actually defining how much time is required, because let's say you are planning getting a a presentation together for upper management, and your boss says that he or she has to be part of the review process, and maybe that's only a half-hour task, but if your boss is going on vacation right before you're going to give the presentation, then you need to schedule that part of the work accordingly so that your boss can actually do it. I see a question here about how is this different from basic project management. It's not. It's actually really the core of basic project management, but project management oftentimes is equated to formal projects, and as I mentioned, I was actually working with a fourth grade teacher to apply the same concepts of project management, but this is virtually identical. Next step in this process is to assess your risks, so what might go wrong, and then if it's significant and or very likely to happen, to come up with a plan B for some of these things that might go wrong, and then finally do it. So this is just a process. Again, some people, I'm going to flip back real quick. Some people do like to go from box one to the bottom. My husband, for instance, makes many trips to Home Depot when he's doing a home improvement project. But by really treating planning more as a process, then you can get better at it. And I see, again, a project's not repeatable. The process is. Otherwise, the steps are the same. Absolutely, the planning process is repeatable. It may produce different projects as a result. I want to shift gears again to process in kids. Process falls under a category of thinking tasks called executive function. And executive function is a frontal lobe brain process. I'm not a doctor or psychologist, but I've worked with a lot of learning support teachers. And your brain develops at different rates physically. So have any of you ever found yourself asking, why can't my child figure out how to get ready for school in the morning? I used to ask that question. It turns out that it needs more sleep, but it also could be that your child has not yet developed some of the cognitive skills to be able to figure out how to get out the door in the morning. The ability to work with process and these other executive function skills is really a combination of how much the brain has physically changed and also the amount of experience a child has working with process. And so some children honestly can't get themselves out the door on time. Now the good news is that according to these learning support teachers that I've talked to, you can actually imprint process on a child's mind. And they can learn to be quite efficient even though they didn't necessarily figure it out themselves. So case in point, when my son was in second grade, he was one of those kids who had a hard time getting himself out the door. And I had a younger child as well, and was trying to manage two children and myself and get them off to preschool or the before school program and then get myself into work by 8 o'clock. And my son in particular struggled. So one of these teachers suggested just create a process, put the steps down that he needs to follow, illustrate it or put little stickers or whatever will work for him, and then just post it up on the wall someplace where he can easily see it and make him follow it very strictly, and before long you won't need that piece of paper on the wall and he'll be able to do it. Well, sure enough, it worked. In less than a week he was able to follow the process, and after that he was always quite efficient about getting himself out the door. So can you think of other processes that your children may be struggling with? How about getting ready for bed at night? Homework. I think a lot of kids honestly are not very efficient doing homework because they really haven't figured out a process for getting it done. And that process may have to change as the homework gets harder for them and the type of work that they're doing changes. I have another theory that some of our older children, like our teenagers, sometimes appear to be lazy or apathetic when doing things like maybe getting their act together to apply for college or getting their act together to look for a summer job. And I think that what happens with them is either one, they haven't fully developed that cognitive ability. Some of the experts say that this is an ability that many people don't develop until they're almost 20 years old. And on top of that, somebody with a learning disability or with, let's say, ADHD may never fully develop that cognitive skill. But I think that there's also the experience part. So some of these kids really don't know how to approach some of these what seem to be overwhelming tasks, and so they don't. And we adults think that they're just being lazy. But in fact, if we can work with them to define a process, then they can get on it. And again, with my own son, I talked to friends when he was getting ready to apply for college, and they shared their wisdom about the process that was followed. And we laid it out with my son, and he was able to execute it pretty effectively despite some of his own cognitive challenges with process and organization. And it was a surprisingly painless process that he managed pretty much for himself. So we've talked about a lot of applications of process. Now let's talk about developing process thinking. Marianne said it herself. With talking to me about this presentation, she's become much more mindful of process and is beginning to see it and a lot of things that she's doing. I'm going to respond real quick to a comment. Adults following processes blindly can be dangerous if they don't understand why they're doing what they're doing. Absolutely. Following it blindly is more like just a routine and going into autopilot. And I advocate that part of process thinking is to really think through the steps and why you're doing them and what the outcomes and what's the real value of the outcome. And we'll talk in a couple of charts about some of the pitfalls of process thinking. So again, how to develop process. First, just a simple awareness can result in huge changes. I was talking to my husband as I was getting ready for this, and one day he came home from work with this funny grin on his face and said, you know, you got me thinking about process. We're pulling together a proposal today for a big new client, and I started thinking about process and suggested that instead of proposing a solution, that we propose our process for getting to a solution. And he just barely found out that, in fact, they won this contract. And the reason why they did is because the customer said they were really happy to see a process as opposed to just maybe a cookie-cutter solution. At any rate, look for it, and you'll see it. But once you're in that mindset, then there's, of course, a process for enhancing or creating a new process. And that's to start first with identifying what it is, what the problem is that you're trying to improve. In the case, again, of our grocery shopping, there was absolute frustration and wasted time. And that's what we wanted to address first and foremost. The next step in the process would be to really describe the problem, including what the measures are. Because in the case of our grocery shopping process, we really did have four measures. One was the time. One was the money, one was the healthiness of our eating, and the last was the frustration. And probably my highest priority was the time element, with the healthiness coming shortly after. As it turns out, because that was my priority, I defined our process a certain way. I did not, for instance, include couponing because the money was not the highest priority. But the time was. The next step would be then to diagram it. I know that sounds maybe tedious for some people. It doesn't have to be an elaborate diagram. It can just be literally scribbled on the back of an envelope. But just by diagramming it, it really cements in your mind, first of all, what your existing process is, and then what the new one is going to look like. I found once when I was facilitating a process improvement initiative with some financial planners and analysts, they thought they knew the process that they used to do their work, but when we actually did the diagram up on the board, we discovered that the real process with their problem wasn't necessarily that there was an inefficient process. The problem was that they were all using a different process despite using similar words and terminology. And once they were able to come to a common process that they truly were sharing, then they were much more efficient. And diagramming is what really flushed this out for them. The next step in the process is to analyze it. So really look at inefficiencies, redundancies. Is there work that you can take out? When we were at GE, we had an initiative called Workout. And I remember specifically, we'd look at things like, let's say, our status reporting process and decide, do we really have to do this on a weekly basis, or can we do it every other week? The next step is then make some changes and live with them. You've got to give yourself enough time to be comfortable with the process and make it work before you can decide whether it's working for you or not. Then evaluate your results, and if you're happy with things, you're done, and if not, go back to describing and look at your measures and keep repeating the process until you've refined it to the point that you're happy with it. There's some great suggestions. I hope you're reading the chat boxes about identifying bottlenecks and so forth. Yep. Thank you for those contributions. Some tips as you are doing the analysis. Again, really define what your parameters and your measures are. As I said, we did not incorporate couponing into our process because that wasn't one of the highest measures, but somebody else might if they chose to optimize their process around the money aspect. And it also is going to help you to know when you're done and if you're being successful because you've got those benchmarks to be looking for. Second, make sure everybody's trained in the process or in the idea of process thinking. When UPS did their recent work, they trained 700 people to join the people that were already trained in their organization to make sure that everybody was speaking the same language of process improvement and working it efficiently. As much as you may not like it, document it. This helps you to communicate to everybody that's involved, but it also can be a useful reference later. Like, let's say after a year, you decide you're going to keep improving your process. You've already got the documentation. In the case of our grocery shopping process, that didn't happen overnight. It happened over actually several years, and if it were in a more formal environment, the documentation would have been helpful. And as I keep stressing, this is iterative. The first solution that you come up with isn't likely to be the perfect solution. It's going to move you in that direction, hopefully. So just plan to iterate several times. And celebrate success, yes. Let me read the question here. How does process definition differ from the ADDIE model used? I have to say I'm not familiar with the ADDIE model, so if you would like to elaborate, if you know the answer, that would be great if you would share that with everyone. So far, I've painted a pretty rosy version of process, but there are a few pitfalls with process. Number one is turning everything into a process where maybe it's not necessary or it really doesn't exist. When Linda and I were talking about the grocery shopping process, Linda actually loves to grocery shop, unlike me. So she said, what if I like to do it? I said, fine, then don't make it into a process. Just go and enjoy it. But a more serious example, when Jack Welch retired, then one of the people considered as one of his heirs was a man by the name of James McNerney. And when he didn't get that position, CEO of GE, then he was snatched up by the 3M company. Now, 3M at that time was usually consistently rated as the most innovative company in the United States, but it wasn't known for being especially efficient in its processes. So Mr. McNerney arrived at 3M with all the zeal of a GE executive and applied Six Sigma and process improvement across the board at 3M. And as a result, they became much more productive and their stock price went up and a lot of things improved. But at the same time, their ranking as far as innovation and process started to fall. So each year he was there, they would slip a notch or two in the evaluations that were done of innovative companies. And I never was a 3M employee. My knowledge of this is strictly from reading case studies and different articles in business magazines. But the slip in innovation is largely attributed to an overzealous application of process improvement, and especially in the laboratories and in the creative aspects of the company. And after Mr. McNerney left, the next CEO kind of backed off a little bit of that, and I think that 3M is considered again to be innovative, but maybe has not regained its stature in that regard. So you have to be careful about applying process to the wrong place. The second thing about process is to get locked into it and to lose your flexibility. I think that that one of the biggest inhibitors to creativity is when somebody says, but we've always done it this way. So you want to make sure that you understand why you're using a process and not just follow it blindly. A third pitfall of process thinking is defining it at the wrong level. If you define it at too high a level, then you leave a lot of room for variation, and you may not really have a process at all. In fact, Linda and I talk about the definition of a process, and she says there's always a process. It just may have so many variables in it that it can't be recognized as such. And it's not repeatable. I look at that as there isn't a process at all. So it's how you define it. But you want to be careful that you're not that high level or that you're so detailed that you really don't leave any room for professional judgment or even so detailed that it becomes virtually impossible to follow the process. And the last pitfall of process thinking is to have a process but not to communicate a process so others can't fit in. I mentioned the example of the person in a, let's say, a volunteer setting that has a process in their head but doesn't share it. Another example is something Linda and I both experienced, where we both have pretty set processes for getting out the door in the morning and getting our kids out the door. And recently, we both had a situation where our husbands changed their morning routines in a way that collided with our processes. And in both cases, our husbands were trying to be helpful, but they didn't recognize we had a process, and we didn't recognize what was happening. And even though their attempts to be helpful, we both got frustrated with them until we recognized, all right, it's just we didn't communicate the process here. Having a technology glitch that I'm not able to advance the next chart. There we go. Okay, so as a wrap-up, here's a quote from Edward Deming, who is probably the father of quality improvement. I'll let you read that. But as I said at the beginning, process is all around us. And we're not always conscious of how we can use it to make our lives easier and to get more out of what we're doing, even though it does exist all around us. Besides the obvious benefits of reducing costs, time, and defects, process can, in fact, build stronger teams because it can promote better collaboration. It can allow different people to apply their own talents in different ways that can be surprising at times. And the focus when using process goes more on results and less on finger pointing at individual failings. Process can make us more effective as individuals. I talked about some of the personal effectiveness skills, creative thinking, problem solving, planning that can be viewed as a process. And we can take the same attitude toward improvement in these processes so that we improve our own ability to execute those processes. We can reduce stress at home by using process as a parenting tool and helping our kids to be more efficient. And also avoid some of those collisions when different family members are operating from with different processes. And finally, process can just help us to free up some time from frustrating or mundane tasks so that we can have a little bit more fun in our lives. So I think process is really a very simple concept, but it can be extremely powerful. I hope that in listening today that you can realize some of these benefits, and I hope now that you can find 5 hours of free time in your week to do some of the things that you want to do. So with that, yeah, we can go to questions. Again, we're having trouble with the technology. Marianne, I don't know if, oh, here we go. Whoops. There we go. We can take a few questions now, or if you want to follow up with me on any of the things that I said, here's my contact information. Please feel free to email me. We invite you to visit our website, our Facebook page, and Marianne?
Well, it's good. We have time for a few questions, so you can go ahead and answer a few, and then I'll pop in with closing information.
Okay. Well, I see a comment here that process is overly broad. Well, I would say it's very simple. So it can be broad, but I view it more as a very simple skill that can be applied very broadly. And as the next person noted, it is applicable to a wide variety of situations. In addition to questions, if anybody's had some success with process, I welcome you to share some of those insights as well.
Andrea, Sharon asked if you look at your chat window, and she says, how do you begin creating an appreciation for process management in an organization?
Well, I always think that any change in an organization really has to come from the top. So one of the easiest ways is to have the executive or the manager or whoever the leader is of the group to start the language and the dialogue about process and to call people's attention to it. But the second thing is just to really start practicing it yourself by having even a diagram that another person can see. And to be working from that consistently. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I drive my family crazy. My kids said, oh, we could give your talk today because I do talk about things so much in terms of process that it just kind of spills out on everybody else. So I guess just practice it yourself and people will start to see some of the benefits.
Oh. We also have Barbara asks, do you ever use concept mapping tools to diagram processes?
To be honest with you, I am not a professional process improvement person. So I have seen those used, but I do not use them personally. I think they can be, they're great for organizing. What is the result? Oh, the result of the grocery store. I'm sorry. Now, the result of the grocery store process was that We did knock our time down to 38 minutes. That was our best, including commute time. Did we continue to improve? Yeah, we did. In fact, we had a funny thing happen where one day, my biggest frustration with the time was standing at the deli counter. I just couldn't figure out how to change that part of the process. And one day, the woman behind the counter, just when I walked up, handed me my order. And I think my jaw hit the ground, and she said, I've seen you come in for the past couple of months. You almost always order the same thing. You're almost always here at the same time. And I thought I'd take a risk and have your order ready for you. So after that, we developed a little technique, the two of us, where I would walk in and catch her eye and give her the thumbs up that, yeah, I want the same order that I usually buy. And then I would do all of my produce shopping, and then I'd swing by and she would hand it to me. So we did that. And there's been some other smaller things that we've done, but that was the funniest of what came through. A question here from Rich, any special considerations for applying process insights to academic work, reading, writing, teaching preparation? Writing, definitely. I think Marianne's going to say something about this. We are about to publish our second book, which is called Hit the Job Writing. And in that book, we actually talk about a process for writing, which starts with thinking of what the message is and who the audience is, and then working through getting it on paper, editing it, and a number of different iterations. So absolutely, it can apply to writing. Reading, I've actually worked with my daughter on different approaches for reading for studies, starting with scanning, let's say, a textbook chapter for headings and starting by just sort of anticipating or seeing what's going to come, and then looking at some of the questions that she expects she's going to be having to answer either for her assignment or on a test, and then reading, looking for those answers. Teaching preparation, I have my own process for doing that, but I think that's probably pretty personal, but I absolutely, it could be, a process could be applied. Let's see. Any thoughts on the GTD method of work? Do you know the GTD? Neither Linda nor I are familiar with that. Like I said, process is something I use, but I'm not a professional process improvement person. Can we get a copy of the slides? I think Marianne's going to talk to that, and feel free to email me about
really pop in with that, Andrea. Andrea has agreed to stay on for a few more minutes, so I want, for those of you who have to leave at the end of your lunch hour, I want to pop in here, and then we'll get back to Andrea. I want to give a big thank you to Andrea for a very helpful webinar. As we've mentioned, Andrea has a training and consulting practice. She's also co-author of the book Hit the Job Running, and she's working with her business partner, Linda, who she introduced you to, Linda Dowd, to publish her new book, Hit the Job Writing, about business writing skills. And you can purchase Andrea's books from her website or from Amazon or other booksellers. And if you have further questions that don't get addressed when we get back to Andrea, or you want to find out more about her business and her books, please visit her website at hitthejobrunning.com. And you can contact her through her website or through email. Before we get back to Andrea, I want to just mention our next webinar. Our next Friday Forum webinar will be on Friday, March 8th, when Patrick Payne gives us tips and tricks from a corporate recruiter. You can register for it and other upcoming webinars on our website at alumni.virginia.edu under Career Services. Thank you to everyone who joined us today. We appreciate you spending your time with us and hope that you found Andrea's information helpful and that you'll be starting identifying and improving the processes in your life. As always, we've been recording today's webinar, and you will receive a link to the webinar recording in an email later today. But now we'll get back to Andrea. She'll address a few more questions.
Okay, thanks, Marianne. I want to add that this book that we're about to publish is actually authored by Joe Judge. And it's He has his own tone. I love it. It's a little bit, I call it irreverent. So it's an interesting look at business writing, a little different from some of the other books that I've seen on the market. There was a question about creativity process. Again, I think that's kind of a personal thing, whether that you can use a process for creativity. I know that when I write, I have a process that I use where for writing, I actually have to force myself to sit down for like an hour or two a day, even if I just stare at the keyboard for an hour or two a day. But I don't have a formal process. If somebody else has a formal process, I'd love to hear about that. I would be a little concerned, though, because I think, again, with creativity, you know, one of the definitions of process is that there is a predictable, to some degree, outcome. And I like to think that creativity sometimes produces not so predictable results. Although we do a creativity class in which we have people brainstorm and we use different techniques for getting people to come up with more creative ideas, because one definition of creativity is that it's a useful, something that's creative is either a useful or interesting result of putting together two ideas that have never been put together before. And so you can do some things to kind of foster putting those two ideas together to produce creative thinking, but I don't know that I would ever put an end-to-end creative process together. I don't know. I'd like to know what other people think about that. Somebody asked, how do you turn email into a process? Well, it depends what dimension of email you're talking about. If you're talking about just writing an email, then you can pretty much use the writing process that I briefly talked about that will be in our book, of thinking about what your message is and who the audience is, drafting an email, and then going back and doing your editing process. But email can also be a process of just, let's say, picking two times a day that you're going to review your email. Like, there's a book, and I'm drawing a total blank on the name of the book. Anyway, the guy that wrote it advocates that you should only check your email twice a day. Once first thing in the morning, and then give yourself the time to go through your mailbox and answer everything. And then a second time, sort of mid to late afternoon, where you catch the additional emails that have come in and responses to the ones to emails that you might have sent out in the morning, and just keep that as your process, and don't get on any other times unless there's something that's really important that you know you have to be looking for. Creativity and sanity. Okay. Yeah, email's taken a lot of us over. That, and we found we had to redesign our daughter's study processes lately to remove all of the electronic distractions from her study processes. And what do you know? Her grades are much better. Big surprise.
Andrew, I don't know if I've been answering some emails related to people getting on the webinar. If you scroll back up the chat window, there are a few more questions if you want to address about what someone asked about using processes in volunteer management. Any suggestions for exploring that more?
There was something about volunteer management. I'm interested in using process and volunteer management. Any suggestions for exploring that more? This is when you might want to contact me offline. Absolutely. There are major processes that, well, it depends on the volunteer organization, but oftentimes there's recruiting processes to get more members. There are fundraising activities that could benefit from having a process. Meetings, running meetings, or a whole kind of rhythm of meetings for any organization. And I think that maybe one way to think about it would be to see what some of your, if you have chairs in front of different functions in your volunteer organization, then each of those chairs could be challenged to come up with a process. The repeatable element of what they do, it may not be repeatable within like one calendar year, but from year to year, what do they do and what's the process? So for instance, putting on a banquet, there is actually a process that you could come up with for preparing a banquet. I was chair of recruiting for our local Boy Scouts, one of our troops, and I had a definite process for recruiting new scouts. So it really depends on the function, but anytime you want a predictable outcome, then a process is important. And think about timing on process too, because again, with volunteers, we don't have a lot of time. So anything that can be done ahead of time and not in a crisis mode can be really, really helpful. Let me scroll down. I think some more things were coming in.
Yes, I'd say, Andrew, if you want to address one last question, and then we'll wrap up.
Is there one that you see, Marianne, that I've missed? I see a lot of comments, and I appreciate the positive feedback.
There are a lot
feedback.
Of good comments.
Thank you
had asked
for
when creativity became a question. If you scroll down, Professor Cole has said what his creative process is as a pianist.
Okay, right. My creative process has to do with mood and preparation. The process to prepare by practice, absolutely, until the mood hits to be creative, where those processes really shine. Actually, I'm a flute player, and you're right. Part of the creative process is developing, I suppose, the technique and the ability to then take it to the levels that you can be more creative. So I do agree with that. But if I were to sit down and do a painting, let's say, and I do a certain amount of artwork, I guess I don't, maybe it's because I don't do it as often as certain other things. I don't have quite as disciplined a process for some of those other creative things that I do. And partly because I don't want one, because it's for my enjoyment.
Well, thank you so much, Andrea, and thank you, everyone. Again, Andrew has agreed to take email questions if something you wanted to ask did not get addressed during the webinar. And so I want to thank you again from Alumni Career Services here at UVA's Alumni Association. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time on Friday, March 8th.